Tonight, President Trump delivered his fourth State of the Union address, and you can tell it sweeps because this show had it all. The tearful reunion reminiscent of countless YouTube videos, the Lifetime Achievement Award that evoked the Academy Awards, which included the performance of a lifetime from Rush Limbaugh, who pretended to be surprised, and the kind of blatant backstabbing that can only be found on Real Housewives. At the start of the State of the Union, President Trump refused the extended hand of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. It was particularly painful for her because it came immediately after Vice President Pence had put out his hand and at the last second pulled it away with a psych. Nancy Pelosi looked alternatingly like someone who was catching up on her scrapbooking and also someone having a terrible night of speed dating, which it kind of was. And finally, during the State of the Union address, President Trump presented a future where Americans will one day land on Mars, while Democrats propose a future where one day they will be able to count votes. The Trump Report starts now.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome to the Trump Report. Yes, accept no substitute. Special tip of the hat to my friend, comedian Tom Kelly, who inspired the final joke there. And even when I realized he had told a similar joke, I couldn't pull back because it made me laugh too much. I'm Christian Black. This is the Trump Report, live post-State of the Union, post-Iowa caucus, sort of. It's still going on. It'll never really leave us. But joined, as so often, by the one, the only, Chelsea Galicia.
Well, hello.
And making his triumphant return to the Trump Report, the one and only Mr. Drexel Hurd, BBC and NPR political analyst and the executive director of L.A. County Democratic Party, that being Mr. Drexel Hurd. And then down at the other end of the desk, KNBC TV legal analyst Royal Oaks. Good to see you as well.
A pleasure.
You have a new podcast. We can mention it again later, but let's
Thank
get it
so
out
much.
Of the way right at the top of the show.
The podcast is called Too Many Lawyers, but there's a catch. Two is...
I like how he looked right at me when he said that.
Well, no, you're not one of the too many lawyers. It's TWO Many Lawyers, because my son Connor Oaks and I are the co-hosts. We're both lawyers, and we're talking about legalization of all drugs. Buttigieg wants to legalize meth and heroin. We're going to talk on our next show about what wine would pair well with heroin, so you don't Ooh. Want to miss that. Too Many Lawyers, wherever you see fine podcasts.
I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's obviously a cab, but that's up to you guys to decide. I don't want to ruin the show for anyone. So, you know, we do something time to time here on the Trump Report, as Chelsea would know. We like to sometimes highlight good week, bad week. I'm going to say good week, Donald Trump. Great week, Donald Trump. Bad week, Democrats, not looking so good.
Why is it all Democrats? Why isn't it just Iowa?
Well, because you can extend it out to the impeachment.
That's not going well
tomorrow.
But it's not because the Democrats did a bad job.
They didn't. Were they successful?
But listen, there are sometimes...
Depends on how you measure success.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the measure of success will be in November. You know, because you unsuccessfully removed him from office, and then if you're also unsuccessful at removing him from office the old-fashioned way, well, I guess the old-fashioned way is Archduke Ferdinand, but you know what I mean. Sort of, you know, the civilized way, at the ballot box, or the app that doesn't work on your phone, that being the way. But, I don't know that I see it as a success, the impeachment, it seemed like Nancy Pelosi didn't actually want to do it. Royal, as our visiting legal expert, obviously we have our in-house counsel, but I wanted
Am
to...
Am I the out-house counsel?
Yes, I believe you are. And we'll talk about State of the Union in Iowa, but I did want to start off just very briefly, your thoughts on this approach to impeachment, and was there a way that it could have worked, or was the deck always going to be stacked against the Democrats, and
yeah,
he was
always
never going to be removed from office?
So short of a Watergate-style smoking gun, oh my God, he killed somebody, or he authorized a burglary or something, of course they were never going to get 20 Republicans to join the 47 Democrats to equal 67, two-thirds to kick him out. But you put your finger on it, I think, Christian, when you said, you know, was it a success in that November, that's when the decision will be made. And that's the whole ballgame. This was not an issue of whether he would be kicked out. He was never going to lose. Yes, there was a question of whether it would be extended by weeks and many witnesses, and the Democrats lost that. But in a way, maybe they won, because they definitely got their point across about the abuse of power and the obstruction of justice. And they also now can run on the argument that this was a cover-up. Mitch McConnell, you know, game, set, Mitch, he would not permit witnesses. What kind of a trial do you have without witnesses? So they've got that arrow in their quiver, along with the substantive arguments against Donald Trump. So, yeah, I think you're right. We won't know till November who won. But just on paper, darn good week for the president because of the outcome of the impeachment deal and plus the speech.
Question for you. When you said that they got their point across about the abuse of power,
right,
who do you think that they got their point across to? Anybody that wasn't already thinking that he abused his power?
I guess we have to assume that there are millions of Americans who are not political junkies. They are not wedded to one side or another, but they are the great middle that kind of, they shift with the wind and they decide elections. Because, I mean, what was Hillary beating, what, 63 million to 60 million? Pretty darn close. So I think the question of whether the great middle was persuaded by Adam Schiff, I mean, a tremendously skillful prosecutor, he used to be a prosecutor. On the other hand, the Republicans had some really sharp lawyers, just from a lawyering standpoint in terms of oral argument. That guy, Patrick Philbin from the White House counsel's office, a brilliant guy. So I think they both put their best foot forward. But there's no doubt that the American public has been drenched, immersed in this soup of obstruction of justice and abuse of power. They know exactly where the Democrats are coming from in terms of you withheld money from Ukraine for personal political benefit. Now, there's the business of about whether Biden was involved improperly as well. But definitely, that has been teed up. And if the American public, if they say, yeah, in addition to the fact that we don't really like Donald Trump, we don't like somebody that calls himself a very stable genius, who does that? In addition, we have our doubts as to, you know, whether the impeachment maybe was proper. Half the country, according to Gallup, said that impeachment was proper. So, yeah, we're just going to have to wait till November.
And we'll move on from this in a moment. But you're talking about the legal team. And this was a point that I made last week.
You're a Dershowitz fan?
Well, the question being, if you're the president of the United States, and even if you have a parking ticket, do you want the guy who's represented Klaus von Bülow and O.J. Simpson? Do you want him anywhere near your case?
Yeah, and Jeffrey Epstein, Bill Maher, called his clients flabby, grabby, and stabby. So, yeah, that was a problem. He carried baggage, but he also is a brilliant constitutional lawyer. Of course, he overreached.
Or a brilliant actor.
Well, he overreached, and even the Republicans called some of his ideas radical. Ken Starr was brought in. I mean, yeah, you know, why not bring in Clara Bow from the 20s? So the bottom line is Trump thought it was a TV event, and he brought in TV-savvy folks like Dershowitz and Ken Starr. I don't know how much it helped to have those. They were like cameo players mainly. The heavy lifting was done by Jay Sekulow and,
sure,
and the other White House counsel.
But if only Johnny Cochran were still with us.
I know.
That would have been the real show.
Johnny,
Drexel,
we hardly
because
knew
you
yet.
Haven't been here in a while. It was pre-impeachment the last time you were here. Just sort of your thoughts, and I know that the vote isn't until tomorrow, but just look. Basically, at this point, we're looking back on it. What do you think, from the Democrats' point of view, you know, from their role, do you think there's anything they could have done differently? And do you consider it a success, or is the verdict out on that?
I think that part of the strategy, I'm going to start with the second part of that question, because I
sure
think part of the strategy that Democrats probably should have deployed the most was educating the American public on how the process worked. And I don't think that the American public actually understood, based on the Republican arguments, by saying this is an improper process, by saying, hey, the witnesses, they should have called witnesses in the House. But to the American public, you know, not a political junkie, somebody wouldn't realize that trials are in the Senate and the House acts as the grand jury. And the House Democrats probably should have drilled that into the American public's head that this is, and they tried, but unsuccessfully, kind of framing this narrative that, you know, this is where witnesses actually are. And the reason why we didn't get witnesses was because of
obstruction
of justice. And that was not made apparent throughout the few days for Republicans to come back and say, well, why are they asking for more witnesses? We're not asking for more witnesses. We're actually asking for the witnesses that we subpoenaed and refused to testify
right
in front of the House. And that should have been the argument.
So I guess the surprise for me as it relates to the State of the Union is that you have to imagine that President Trump was severely tempted to mention it, but he did not. Is anyone here surprised that he – because I'm surprised he didn't mention it. Did anyone else expect him to say something, even if it was, you know, if he didn't spend that much time on it? Or did – everyone here actually just figured that he would take the high road for not the first time in his presidency, but the first time in possibly his life.
The idea of the president taking the high road is very strange. And yet I think what happened here is that whereas 99% of the time he's able to speak off the cuff and say pretty much what he wants, even if it's a semi-formal situation and he's got a transcript here, I think it was one of those rare cases where he was not about to really depart from the teleprompter. I imagine that there were very few lines in that speech. And whereas he, I'm sure, was sorely tempted to gloat in some way that he thought might be presidential, the speechwriters, I'm sure, told him, ixnay on the gloating. You know, it's not quite in the books yet. It's not going to look right. You want to look presidential. And I think he did look presidential. He, you know, starting with Ronald Reagan, you know, thanking people, bringing guests into the chambers, you know, families of killed soldiers. It was a very smooth presentation. To the point where Nancy was so mad she ripped up the papers.
Oh, interesting take that's on a, why she did yes, that. Right.
Well, there's a couple of reasons why she might have done it, but your thought, Drexel.
First of all, listen, the theatrics of this president, every president has brought in people into the gallery.
Sure.
What they haven't done is try to distract the American public from the fact that there were zero policies of moving forward in this particular speech. There were a lot of, and I know we're going to talk about the State of the Union here in a second, but there were far too many reality television moments in this State of the Union to distract us from the reality of the failed policies of the Republican Party and this president. So that's based, you know, in what we've seen this Donald Trump as the reality show person over the past 20 years, that's what we got in tonight, because that's what he knows.
Oh,
and he knows is that he needs to distract the public from the fact that he's got policies that, you know, I'm spending trillions of dollars on a space force is unnecessary. And you and I both love Star Trek Picard, but I don't think we need to be spending that money on building a space force when we've got American families that are still hurting. So I think that is the problem with theatrics like bringing in Rush Limbaugh and putting on the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Oh my God, that was beyond theatrics.
In the middle,
it is.
Those are the times where, if President Obama had done that in the middle of the State of the Union, I mean,
President Obama presented Rush Limbaugh with the
You know what? Here's the thing: you would have thought that, and you would have thought that the president, this was an election of Barack Obama versus Donald Trump. The amount of times that Donald Trump brought up Barack Obama has not gotten over the fact that American people love Barack Obama more than they love Donald Trump, and he is still not over that.
Well, they love the Ebola virus more than Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, that's not what I'm saying is that the fact that 3 years later into this presidency, this president cannot seem to turn the attention away from
the
Barack
most
Obama.
Recent polling shows him at 50%, whereas at this time Obama was at 46. So I'm surprised he didn't mention that.
You know, and then the other thing, of course, we know he hasn't gotten over is the popular vote, you know, in 2016. Right. He'll always mention that he doesn't feel like the counting was accurate there because there's no way he could have possibly lost that. Because it's come up, and yes, I did make a joke about it at the top of the show, I think that the announcement of Rush Limbaugh's terminal cancer,
I don't think it's terminal. It's advanced stage 4 lung cancer. He didn't refer to it as terminal.
Yeah, that's true. He didn't use that word. There have been some reactions to it in the media or on social media in particular that you would, of course, not be surprised. Some of them, it's more like, you know, about policy, you know, about like, you know, something about like healthcare that you're going to use now that you didn't support, that sort of thing. But then a lot of it, you can see that people were, you know, look, when you're any kind of divisive public figure, you have to expect that. But that's not necessarily the way I looked at it. But if I knew this afternoon from looking at the Drudge Report that he was going to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom, he had to know There's no way he was surprised. Why did he pretend to be so surprised? He can be moved by it. That part I don't doubt. But I was just like, what is this? And I know this isn't hardly the biggest takeaway from it. But for me, that was I was just like, come on. Who's he fooling?
He's competing with Alan Dershowitz for Actor of the Year.
Maybe he felt it would look bad, like he didn't appreciate it if he didn't exude. But, yeah. I mean, it's hard for people to be magnanimous about somebody they think is despicable when that person is getting bad news. I want to go back for a second, Christian, to something Chelsea said. She called me correctly on a mistake I made. I suggested that Nancy tore up her speech because she said to herself, doggone it, that was a wonderful speech. I admit it. Donald Trump did great. I'm so mad I'm going to tear it up. You're right. But I will say this. I felt like we should have a football announcer saying, welcome to the Anger Management Bowl, because when the night starts and the guy won't even shake Nancy's hand and the night ends with her tearing up his speech, to me, it's kind of petty for both sides. I mean, can't they, take it to a higher level? Do we have to have the anger at the beginning and the end? I mean, I don't know that she should have taken the bait. She had plenty of opportunities to blast him. But ripping up the speech, I mean, I think maybe that was overboard.
I'm with you on the pettiness, but I see it sort of both sides, of course. But I don't expect anything better from Trump. It was interesting to see that from Nancy Pelosi, who seemed during the middle of the speech to be like, scolding people in the back, who I think she was perhaps scolding people that were leaving. I saw on Twitter some people said, I walked out in the middle of the speech, couldn't take the lies and all that anymore, and I wasn't going to dignify
it any
longer.
She should have just spoken into her cuff like the Secret Service guys.
Yeah, I know. There was a lot of times where she was talking, and sometimes
it seemed like
she was like pointing to her.
That's consistent with what Speaker Pelosi has done every time somebody steps out of line in her chamber.
Not a great look, though.
And listen, she controls the chamber. It's her house. She can do whatever she wants to. The reality is, and her statement after that was, somebody asked her, like, why would you rip up the speech? She said it was the courteous thing to do, considering the alternative.
Right.
And, that's the reality, is that you have a trash speech.
It's just not going to move the needle with, and I think what Royal said earlier is what we should be paying attention to, is not the political junkies, not those of us who are really sure about what side we're on, but it's those in the middle who go with sort of where the wind takes them. And I think those people see this kind of petty thing as a reason why they're above politics, even though we can understand the frustration and why, people behave the way they do. To the people who are not paying close attention to every last little move, it just looks like petty fighting. That why should people get involved in politics? It's just easier to throw up their hands and say, I'm not going to be involved in this. Kind of almost like I'm too good for being involved in this. And when we should be trying to elevate politics to be more engaging than, professional sports. This isn't helping anybody, I don't think, become more engaged.
I will say the one thing that we haven't seen Democrats do, which actually makes me think of this is why Nancy Pelosi did it on live television, is because Democrats have been unable to prove that we can be just as a part of, we now have to change the way that we look at how we fight this president going forward. And I was listening to MSNBC on the way over, where everybody kind of said this reality stunt that the president pulled in the State of the Union is exactly what we're going to see during this campaign, and Democrats have to be just as flashy going into this election.
Why was anybody surprised?
And that's what I'm saying. But because it's been consistent, as you just pointed out, the president's approval ratings are going up when he's done nothing to improve the American people. It's not the fact that he is done anything. The policies aren't there. If I ask every Republican, every once in a while, I say, name me a policy that this president has that has helped the American people.
Tax cuts.
Tax cuts have not helped the average American person. Then I say, have they helped you? And they're like, no.
My 401k is doing
and I'm
really
like,
well.
Not everybody has a 401k. So that's the argument that Democrats are just going to have to make, because at the end of the day, we know that the president's policies have been unable to help the American people.
And that's what the response should have been.
Sure.
But it wasn't.
But nobody's listening to that response is the problem.
Well,
The old response. Nobody's been listening to the old response.
Okay, but the response tonight after the State of the Union from the Democratic governor of Michigan, she said, in essence, you know, I'm not going to talk about what Trump talked about. I'm just going to talk about the actions.
Right.
And he did. She said, I'm going to talk about the actions of Democrats. OK, that's great and all. But that doesn't move the needle on helping people see where he is lying and misleading and being deceptive. Right. For example, he claimed, you know, tweet, anything under 2% GDP growth is, you know, a failure and should, you know, get a president tossed from the office. However, what is GDP growth for 2019? 2% or 1.8%?
Okay.
You know, something, or 2.1 even. But it was in the realm of what Trump was like, this is completely unacceptable.
Right.
So pointing out where he lies, misleads, and deceives over and over and over and over again. Trump won from saying the same thing over and over and over again.
It's kind of like Bernie Sanders, but that's right.
And the Democrats can't point that out?
But that's the thing. You have to point out sometimes the obvious truths over and over and over again.
So when Trump says unemployment level for people of color is the lowest in history, is he lying?
But it's misleading.
It is misleading.
But it's true?
Is it the number is low?
Does he get credit for it?
But it goes back
to the way that it's measured.
Right. And it goes back to what I said earlier about the economic policies of the president. What we've seen, and it's been consistent with the George Bush tax cuts, and it's going to be consistent with the Donald Trump tax cuts if he gets reelected. We know where the end game is of Republican policies on economic policies. That's just going to be the reality. Economists have projected the end result for us based on history. So we know what's going to happen. When it comes to unemployment, the unemployment rate is based on the Obama-era regulations, and we know that to be true. It is not based on the Republican tax cuts of 2017.
Yeah, like constitutional amendment. You know, we can't have a third Obama term.
Right. Well, yes, but the reality, other than the unemployment rate being the biggest lie, the other big lie that the president continues to tout, which I don't know why people believe, is the pre-existing condition lie. Why would you need to protect something that was already protected under the Affordable Care Act? You are protecting the American people from your own party, who want to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. So you're protecting the pre-existing condition is protecting the American people from your side.
Here's another, you know, misleading. He's saying wages are going up. Okay, if you look at over the last 40 years, they have been so stunted that if you look at their growth, it's been really anemic. I mean, not even, you know, Fed Chair Jay Powell can explain why is it that wage growth is going so slowly if we have such a powerful economy. So, yes, it's growing, but if it's so pathetically growing that you take pride in it, we've got issues.
So Christian, I think what we're looking at is the State of the Union as a kickoff for the campaign. You're going to see hammered these same themes. Things are great. Unemployment is wonderful. We're strong and we're respected around the world. And it's kind of working with the public. I think the public feels America is back. America is in good shape. That's what the public opinion polls say. You have a guy who is historically unpopular. In the history of the Gallup poll, there has never been a president that didn't, for at least a day, have a majority of the public approving him. And Trump, unlike every other president, has never climbed to 51%. So now you're faced with a Democrat decision. Do you go with the progressives thinking, if we can't beat Trump, I mean, we've got to seize the moment, we've got to move the needle to the left, or do you recognize that increases the chance Trump is going to win? Let's go with a moderate. How do we think the Democrats are going to come out on that divide? I mean, it seems like it's death or life for them in terms of choosing one or the other.
I think that's the problem, is that you have in the Democratic Party, you have two very vocal, sizable schools of thought.
It's like the Drexels and Chelsea's.
I was about to say, I believe we have at this desk two different approaches. Mm-hmm. There is someone at the desk who thinks that Bernie Sanders is
I don't want to speak for you. Would you say that he is out of the Democratic candidates who are actually running, not Hillary, who will eventually run, but out of the candidates who are currently running, would you say that you believe that Bernie has the best chance to beat Trump? Just sort of a simple approach.
Yes, but even looking at where Drexel and I were, you know, the last election, he was like way Hillary and I was way Bernie. And now we would both be happy with Elizabeth Warren.
I would.
I mean,
be happy
I was always
Elizabeth
a Chris
Warren.
Dodd guy, but you know, you guys could be wherever you wanted to be. You know, that's fine.
But the safe choice, the establishment choice of Joe Biden at this point, I think, is a guaranteed loss.
And look, Joe Biden had
a
terrible night last night.
And yet he's been leading in the polls nationally.
Sure. Yeah. But Joe Biden's been leading the polls due to name recognition. And listen, I love Joe Biden. I think he's great. I would, if he's the nominee, obviously we'd vote for Joe Biden. But, you know, at this point, based on the numbers last night, based on his speech after Iowa, I mean, I was texting with friends last night, like, what is the vice president even saying right now?
It wasn't as bad as Dean's yell, was
Well,
it?
Sure, it wasn't a, you know, but you know, I think that back to the State of the Union real quick, because, you know, we're pointing out the lies of the president. You know, I'm just looking at, you know, some of the topics from the speech, you know, where he talked about education. We wouldn't have to defend education if Betsy DeVos wasn't out. When Republicans talk about choice and school choice, you're like, you wouldn't have to have school choice if you funded schools properly. You wouldn't have to have choice if you paid teachers properly. If you didn't have a Secretary of Education who literally cut the funding for teachers to be able to repay themselves back when they have to pay for students because Republican policies want to hurt the American family so they can't actually afford
school. Wouldn't the ideal thing be to have choice and proper funding for the other schools?
I think but there shouldn't be a need for choice if you funded properly. Because right now, the Republican narrative, and you heard it in tonight's speech, was government schools.
Uh-huh.
That is not the line. To admonish public school teachers by calling them government schools is insane to me. And I can't wait to hear what the teachers' unions are going to say about that, because that's exactly the route that Republicans and this president want us to go in, by saying that these are schools that are run by the government instead of these are schools that are run by your local communities, their local school boards, your local teachers, and your local parents. And that's exactly what's happening. Yet this government fails to fund them properly so that they can maintain the basic necessities for their students.
It would have been a great thing to go in the response to say that Trump is taking credit for being the hero of crisis he and other Republican administrations have caused. But to be truthful, it would have had to say, and, you know, weren't alleviated by Barack Obama. So to take on some responsibility for it, which is why I think those people in the middle who go with the wind would be more inspired by a Bernie Sanders campaign than Joe Biden. Sure, the political junkies will get out there to vote for Joe Biden, but the passion that you need, the grassroots levels that really rises up, and so that people who are sort of only halfway paying attention to politics, they're not going to be lifted in the tide to go vote unless it's a really impassioned vision and campaign, and I don't think Joe Biden will ever
be. Well, it sounds to me like you're describing the Yang Gang. I don't know who you're talking about, but when you're talking about passion and people who are motivated to get out there.
But I just want to point out to Chelsea's point, and I know that Chelsea loves Senator Sanders, but what we even saw in Iowa last night, a state where...
We saw something?
It took a while.
It took us a day.
Eventually.
It took us a day, eventually. But what we saw in Iowa was... an underwhelming performance from Bernie Sanders.
Oh my goodness!
In terms of the enthusiasm for Senator Sanders, an overwhelming enthusiasm. I was expecting a enormous wave of new voters for Senator Sanders, and you saw. And if you looked at the numbers from 2020 were the same numbers from 2008, were not the same numbers from 2016. We saw less voters in Iowa in 2020 than we did in the past two primaries. And if Bernie Sanders was the candidate to do that, to bring a groundswell of new people out there, he didn't do it last night.
We also had five candidates, and the fact that it split with Elizabeth Warren.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about actually
people showing up.
Because what ends up happening, and for those that don't know, like Iowa was split into two different sections. You had your first round, your second round. if Bernie Sanders or any candidate was going to be the candidate to like really just bring folks together, the lower tier candidates would have.
Is Iowa really representative of all of the United States? Definitely not.
Oh, definitely not. I'm just saying that there should have been, you know, for Bernie Sanders, who did well in the last Iowa primary, it should have just been a better night.
There's a very simple solution for Bernie Sanders. Bring Larry David in, and he should pretend and you know, make up whatever you. He would do so much better. He's got him nailed.
So I think that, you know, you brought up the biggest point about Iowa, which is
what?
Which is
that was the biggest point.
The biggest point other about than, Iowa other, is why are they first?
Other than a gay male is leading the Iowa caucus.
The biggest
right
point
now.
Is that why is Iowa first?
They got who up are they early and got in line first.
And when you see the vote totals of who's leading, it's like 40,000 votes. And I know that's not 100%, but that's like that's barely enough. I think you could get 40,000 votes out of this studio. I don't mean the one
you're right. It's psychological. It's just momentum. They're number one.
And it's Iowa. And they also apparently don't know how to do it. And you know this is the third consecutive. This is the biggest problem. But there's been a problem the last few caucuses. Whatever the plural of caucuses is, there have been problems. And it's just like, why do they have this right? New Hampshire, that's another problem.
I will point out, New Hampshire has a primary.
However, I know. But
the rules of the Iowa caucus, and listen, I'm not bashing Bernie Sanders. I'm just saying the rules were made specifically for him. The app was not. However, the results of the results that we saw today were not based off the results from the app. They were based off the results from the paper trail that was provided. They did it because we're about to change that in LA County. We're about to go through 11 days of voting with voting machines all over LA County and all over the state.
It's going to be different than the way it was, or it's still
going
to be the little ink blot
thing? There are going to be voting centers all over LA County for 11 days from February 28th or February 22nd through March 3rd, where you can go anywhere in the city and vote. Either go to your polling station or go to your voting center, or you can vote by mail.
So there are going to be. You said anywhere. I thought you meant that I was going to be able to vote it in and out. That seems like the way to go. I'm just saying, like, while you're waiting, because it's going to take forever. Let's vote.
That's a good
call. But
only if they offered impossible burgers.
Well, they don't.
That should be the reward if you vote.
Exactly. You get a little voucher. I think that obviously, you know, Iowa, they're not ready for the big time.
My point of that is we should be eliminating the caucus system.
Yeah.
Everything should be going to primary. The caucus system, Bernie Sanders in the last election pushed for the caucus system. Not only did he push for the caucus system, they changed the caucus. I'm just saying they changed the caucus rules because of some of the problematic things that happened in 2016. Understandably so. The problem is that those rule changes that the Sanders campaign put forth or helped develop.
Oh, I can't wait for this next sentence.
Certainly did not help Senator Sanders in this Iowa caucus.
In what way do you think it didn't help him? I'm not quite sure what the rules were.
Well, I think what happened was, because I said, you know, it was split into two different, the first tier candidates. So Bernie Sanders, I think, went into some caucus with like 40%.
Right.
And then the next tier person was like Pete Buttigieg's like 20%.
Right.
And in a lot of precincts. And then what happened is that everybody that did not make that section, you saw it in the numbers, ended up moving over to the Klobuchar, to the Warrens, to the Buttigieg's, because that's how the system worked for them. Instead of moving into Bernie Sanders, they moved into
the
other
areas. The
changes
that Bernie wanted related to transparency and things of that nature.
Sure. So. And they certainly got the transparency, and we kind of saw the raw numbers. What I'm saying is that the caucus system itself that Senator Sanders was pushing for certainly is not working.
So impressed that you got Buttigieg out with a plural there. I don't think anybody else has tried. There were a couple of initiatives I thought that were interesting in the State of the Union. One was Melania's Be Best, which has always really annoyed me. Be best, you know. I think so Congress should
Scott
pass.
Brown just said be best in there.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Congress should pass a law authorizing funding of the word "the" to yeah. stick it in. So be the best. Best. So the second initiative
that
was,
would
let's
be
go.
$1 trillion. Roy, you yeah. ready? You ready for that?
They'll what? Have to take money from the trillion tree
Space
program.
Force. Well, that's what the
oh,
other one I want
no,
to talk about.
No. Money comes from.
I want to
oh,
I want to talk about
from the
Mars
trillion
here.
Trees.
Now we heard a negative comment about the initiative going to Mars and planting our flag on the surface of Mars. Now, of course, we have social problems here, but what about when John Kennedy in 1961 said we're going to go to the moon by the end of the decade? Now, we had even worse problems, worse poverty by far back in 1960, and yet we did it. So why not spend a little money to go up to Mars?
Can you actually plant a flag on the surface of Mars?
I'm not sure.
I don't know that you're actually going to be able to get it.
Trump
to
had so
up.
Many guests tonight.
I think
he should have had from Mars Attacks one of the little ACAC guys. That would have been. That would have been a ratings buster.
Jesse Torres in the chat asked, "Isn't Iowa the only state with the caucus system?"
No, actually, Nevada has one.
I will be in Nevada. Oh, helping out the Nevada Democrats.
Nevada,
with their
which is
caucus.
Also using the same app as Iowa.
They are not using that app anymore.
No.
They will not be using that
amazingly.
App anymore.
It all of a sudden
Nevada
got
Democrats.
Retired.
Well, look, I think if you're going to change the rules of a caucus system and you're going to add an app, like too much new
yeah.
in
oh,
one
that is
new
not
thing,
the problem.
What I'm saying is it's too much for people.
Oh, that was not the problem.
And the problem was not the app, unfortunately. The app just did not relay the results fast enough,
right.
And then people had to call in. The app actually tabulated the correct results, and that's from the state party. What the problem was is that they could not get the results in fast enough, and there was problems with getting the results in fast enough. So while everybody's blaming the apps for
hold on a second. They put out a statement saying it was the app.
They put out a statement saying that they needed to reconfirm certain things,
right.
And that they were slow. There were slow results coming in.
Okay, and that was a different headline than I read.
Yeah, that's
is
because
the real
that's
the article said. It was the app.
Is the real headline of Iowa, if Biden is just drifting away, it's all Bloomberg. Why can't Bloomberg, with his billions, move into the moderate gap? Because Klobuchar is not exciting people. Buttigieg, let's face it, is kind of a long shot, you know, mayor of South Bend. Why wouldn't people rally around Bloomberg?
Well, I think that, you know, with Biden, it'll be much more telling. I would say New Hampshire's probably a better indication.
And then South Carolina, he's big down there.
But, I mean, the you know, look, there's never been the fire for Joe Biden. And, you know, we've talked a lot about that on the show. And the idea that he's finishing fourth is, or at least the indication is, and nobody's finished anything yet. But the idea that he might be fourth is obviously that's – but he can overcome it very easily even before Super Tuesday. But you're right. Bloomberg, what a great thing to sit out, the Iowa caucus in particular, because – we had four victory speeches last night. Four people all said that they won.
They weren't victory speeches.
I know.
Nobody said
I know
they won.
That, but I mean, Mayor Pete said, you shocked the nation. So he didn't actually say you shocked them by voting for me. But, you know, they all gave a celebratory feel to what they were saying. So they no one actually proclaimed victory. But you had the four speeches, and it's like, yeah, that's fine.
Sure.
So anybody who saw their candidate speak that night, they're like, oh, yeah, we had a good night.
And I get this question a lot about Mike Bloomberg and Tom Steyer and some of these billionaires. The party is not by party, I mean the party electorate, the primary voters are not interested in a billionaire class. And Bernie Sanders has done a really great job of really making billionaires the villain.
Well, I think Elizabeth Warren has done
Warren,
better than Bernie.
No, Elizabeth
Warren. Billionaire
Warren,
pops up in virtually every sentence
sure,
she utters.
But it's not in a way to... Because Elizabeth Warren is a self-proclaimed capitalist as well, so
right.
Like she's not going to admonish billionaires in the
What's
way that,
wrong with
in
her?
The way that Senator Sanders would make right. them out to be, a villain. But the electorate is not interested in a billionaire leading the party, particularly a billionaire who is not. Who has not been a member of the party. For us to go after Bernie Sanders and say, Senator Sanders has not been a member of this party, and then to come back around and say that Mike Bloomberg, who certainly has not been a member
yeah.
of this party,
of course,
to bring them in
ironic.
Would be hypocritical.
It's ironic
that
Donald Trump is a billionaire who wasn't really a Republican for decades. And look, he's incredibly popular, 93% among Republicans. 93%
yeah.
of the GOP
more, but that
likes
says
him.
More about the Republican Party itself than it does about Donald Trump. If if Donald Trump is just flaming the flame, like being the reality television, flaming the flames of the problems of the Republican Party and where they are on issues that matter, than it is about Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't care about school choice. Donald Trump doesn't care about immigration. Donald Trump doesn't care about criminal justice reform, even though he touted it tonight. Like, he doesn't care about that stuff.
Is there a case?
No, he only cares that the chicken sandwich is back at Popeye's. I mean, that's the important issue that I think he took away from 2019. What were you going to say, Ro?
Is there a case for Elizabeth Warren being the big loser, not only out of Iowa, but in general? I mean, ever since she came out and actually put a fine point on the cost of her health care program and 180 million people losing their insurance, she has been sinking like a rock. She went on Stephen Colbert, of all places, and he was grilling her. Well, how are you going to pay for this, Liz? Well, it's going to even out. No, really, tell me, how you going to... I mean, plus there's the likability factor, which if you raise it, you're attacked as a sexist. But, I mean, Hillary had a likability factor among the general electorate. Do we really think that Liz has a path to victory, given the fact that she, you know, was third in Iowa?
Look, I don't think there's a likability problem with someone who appears to be so uncomfortable sharing a beer with her husband and pretending to be surprised that he wandered into the kitchen when she was on Instagram.
I loved that video.
No, I think we all did. Yeah. I think that's where we all realized that, is she even human? because I don't know if she's capable of emotions. But, you know, I don't think that her campaign was expecting – I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think that they were expecting to have a big night in Iowa. I don't know what they're in it for at this point. I mean, I don't think that they're convinced that they have a real path to the nomination.
I think the problem that Elizabeth Warren – the trap that Elizabeth Warren fell into was trying to appease – too many people on one issue, yeah. And that was Medicare. Medicare for All.
Right,
that should not have been her defining issue, and that became that became the issue that engulfed her, and then that tied her to a more I'm not bashing Bernie, but like to more centrist and moderate Democrat, where everybody was like, oh, I like Elizabeth Warren, and then she like latched onto this like one. It was like the last Horcrux of like Voldemort. Like that just needed to fly away. Then it got latched onto her. It was like the scar. It was like Harry's scar got latched onto her. That was Medicare for All. They got latched onto Elizabeth Warren. And now it won't go away until the end of book seven.
You talk about Star Trek, but yes, right. and then soon
it will hopefully go away. Yeah. And I think that's what she was hoping to do. Yeah. The thing about it is, and you heard Bernie Sanders say it last night, where he said during his speech in Iowa, he said there will be a modest tax on the 1%. That is a change from what Bernie Sanders has said about taxing the upper the billionaires in the country. To change the line from taxing the rich to a modest tax, while not at the same time saying there will be a modest tax on the middle class, is where Elizabeth Warren probably should have swooped in and said, yes, there will be a tax on the middle class because of X, Y, and Z, because you will be paying less in taxes. I mean, you will be paying less in your medical bills and more in your taxes. And I'm pretty sure Chelsea would agree that that is the line that Bernie Sanders probably has been saying, but nobody's listening to because he has failed to say.
Right. So we do only have 2 minutes, and I want to make sure to get to a very important point. So, Drexel, I think it's safe to say that you feel that a moderate voice is the better path towards victory for Democrats.
I said I like Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren.
No, I mean, listen, I like Elizabeth Warren. I was talking to somebody earlier, and I said, well, if Elizabeth drops out, who would you go through next? And I said, well, I'd probably go to Pete, because Pete, I actually align more with Pete than I do with Elizabeth. I just think that in the grand scheme of things, I think Elizabeth Warren has a far better grasp on leading the nation a little bit better. And, you know, I always say, listen, it takes a woman to lead, as I did in 2016, as I will say in 2020. Right. And, you know, like I said, women and gays lead the nation. And so that's kind of like where I am. But I mean, the party's going to decide soon.
Biden may pick Michelle Obama as his running mate.
He might pick her, but that doesn't mean she's going to.
Governor Whitmer, and I was telling Tim, my husband, tonight, I said, when you do a rebuttal to the State of the Union, that is an audition for what is coming next. And I thought Gretchen, I said she could be a VP. Mm-hmm. A VP.
A VP. So then my question is, if you're both sort of leaning towards the further left candidate, do you feel, let me ask you first, Chelsea, again, we have limited time. is a moderate candidate. It doesn't. I'm not even going to specify which one. Not necessarily Joe Biden, but would a moderate candidate be able to beat Trump in November?
A moderate candidate would not be able to beat Donald Trump.
I feel that I'm inclined to agree with that statement, but give me one reason, brief reason, why you feel like that would be the case.
Not enough passion to get enough people to the polls.
What do you think, Drexel?
I think a moderate will be able to beat Donald Trump with a VP candidate next to them that will balance them out.
Would it be Hillary Clinton as
Absolutely
a VP?
Okay,
no. I would be nervous if I was the
number one mistake of Hillary Clinton was picking Tim Kaine, and that should have never been the
number
VP
one
candidate.
Mistake.
Open convention: Nancy Pelosi and Hillary mud wrestling for the nomination.
Adam Schiff.
I'm predicting
Adam
here.
Schiff swooping in at the last second.
No, there's a likability problem.
Yeah, there is a likability problem. Well, Royal, as our guest, what are your thoughts for you? You survey this Democratic field. We feel pretty confident, even though I insist on this show every week that Hillary will still get in before you know it. But, you know, as I said, Super Tuesday is when I'm going to start to think that maybe she isn't, but I still won't be convinced. But out of the available options that Democrats are presenting, who do you feel is like matches up well, or does anyone match up well with Trump where you feel like, yeah, they have a good chance that they would be able to beat him?
Biden. I respectfully disagree with the theory about energizing the base. I think Trump's base is going to be energized because he's been under assault, impeachment, and so on. I think for the Democrats, the worst nightmare for Trump is Biden, because the farther you go left on the spectrum, the more people in the middle are going to say, I'm not going to vote. The socialist, the likability, and so on. So I think the closer to the middle the Democrats get, the better they are and the more likely they are to beat Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I agreed with the idea that a moderate can't beat Trump. I don't know that a far left candidate can beat him either. I don't see anyone.
That's why Elizabeth Warren is almost like the perfect of the Goldilocks.
And if only she were likable.
But she will, you know. And
my goodness gracious!
I know. I mean, the idea that the women are
women are likable.
I told you I'd be attacked.
What I'm saying is that we have Elizabeth Warren. Is
and
one
Trump
of the most likable people. The reason why she's not likable is because she has been out there literally saying what everybody has wanted her to say since she took over Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
How can you not like a guy who calls himself a very stable genius? I mean, wouldn't you want him over for Sunday dinner?
Well, I mean, I don't know if he would come to my house for Sunday dinner. I mean, you see what he serves championship teams, you know. But look, I think it'll be interesting to watch in these primaries in the weeks ahead, which we will, of course, be covering here at the show. Just two quick shout outs from the chat. Our Scott Brown says Mayor Pete and Kamala Harris, Jesse Torres, Sanders Castro, Fidel. No, he's no longer with us.
That's exactly how Trump would
yeah, exactly. Of course,
it would be
so Castro.
Right.
I think, and R. Scott Brown, I know we have to go, also says, what male candidate has a likability problem? I would say probably all of them have, you know, Bernie yells a lot. Biden kissed his granddaughter on the mouth the other day. That's just creepy, you know. Mayor Pete's probably, just when you watch him talk, like, he's probably the most likable.
I said he's a Manchurian candidate.
It really comes down to the Yang Gang. Who's more likable than... Anyway, we are out of time, but thanks so much to everybody who stayed up late. If we do the show this late all the time, it looks like we get more people. In any case, thank you so much to our guest, Royal Oaks, KNBC-TV legal analyst. And again, the podcast is...
Too Many Lawyers. If the downloads aren't high enough, I won't be able to feed our new puppy, so...
Well, there you go. And of course, BBC and NPR political analyst and the executive director of the LA County Democratic Party, Drexel Hurd. Thank you. Chelsea Galicia, who you'll be with us next week.
Hopefully, yes.
Okay, so we'll probably get one more show with Chelsea as an unmarried woman.
Oh, my goodness.
And then
goodness.
After that, look out. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at ChristianDMZ. You will find us next Wednesday at 4 o'clock because we want to be able to talk about the New Hampshire primary. So look for us Wednesday. Thanks so much, everybody, and have a good night.
Bye. Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.